myself out.
I am afraid of.
I'm terrified and paralyzed by.
I am deathly afraid of.
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello, and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is comedian and head of the improv social media for the Addison, Arlington, and Houston Improvs, Ducky Wenzel. Ducky's a newer comic out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He also works at the Addison Improv and is now head of their social media and marketing. And so in this episode, we talk about his promotion of social media and marketing, how they plan to grow their YouTube channel, being a comic, and then we get into his fear of rejection. Like Hugo, he has a lot of PTSD from rejection, and we discuss like how that may affect our lives and how we feel about people just treating us as outsiders, and how Ducky's turned that around and made a life for himself as also a podcaster on the We Are Podcast Network, where he has many a different podcast. So check Ducky Wenzel out at We Are Podcast, and I will have those links in the show notes. But let's get to that interview right now with Ducky Wenzel. All right, my guest this week is comedian and podcaster Ducky Wenzel. Ducky is a comedian slash photographer, do you do photography for the improv as well?
I do photography, video, all this stuff. Basically, yeah. I'm social media marketing and content creator.
Yes, I was going to say you're also in charge of their YouTube channel, which I am fortunate to be a part of. And it's really great to see, you know, people that, you know, that dabble in comedy but may also have gifts in other kind of areas, offer those, you know, or work with a club or, you know, venue to try to promote and help a comedian and the club at the same time with content and things of that nature.
Yeah, dude, what we were looking at is the classic is the Laugh Factory. They always have clips of comedians. And we were talking, Billy Ansoff, who's a manager over there, was like, why do we not do that? And I was like, you're right. Why are we not doing that? So I decided to get the best of the best of local comedians, you being one of them, on there so that we can showcase our local talent for all of the four clubs that the owner owns. So we're still working on the channel. Once it gets to 100 videos, we're going to push it out to hundreds of thousands of people. So you're going to get a lot of exposure from it. It's going to be awesome.
Well, I can't wait. And you know, as someone that also creates and tries to do videos and stuff on their own, it's nice to have an extended clip versus the constraints of a TikTok or Instagram reel of like a minute and a half. It's sometimes
we're going to go TikTok too, though. So don't you just wait for that. We're going to reach out to you for that also. Okay. It's going to rock, dude. But yeah, it's nice to have the long form, like you said, and it really does showcase your talent so mm-hmm. that the name of improv is connected to the talent. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's what's wonderful about it, because there is prestige in that name. And I think connecting our local comedians and saying, hey, they're good enough to be on this stage, they're good enough to be on your stage too. So come get them. They're here. That's why having the contact information is so important to me.
Yeah. So when did you get started with the content and the social media side at the improv?
About a month ago. Sean Trainer, who you probably know, had been doing a lot of this stuff for a long time. And he has, for lack of a better word, graduated to a bigger version of that. He's mm-hmm. working for Kenan Thompson now. I think he's made that public. And he's doing kind of like what he was doing in Texas, which is Texas Funniest Comedian or so. I can't remember what it was. Funniest Comic in Texas. Yes. Yeah. Which I believe your clip is actually from your set in Funniest Comic in Texas. But yes, Sean was doing it, and then he left to do this. So they like to hire internally. They knew that I had some skills with Photoshop and video editing from what I'd done for Black Dog Retro Arcade, which is connected to the Arlington Improv. And they're like, let's give this guy a chance and see what he can do. So basically, I came in with a bunch of ideas. They said, go for it. And that's how we began on all this stuff.
Well, congratulations. And also best of luck, you know, as you move forward and try, you know, start to make those, you know, clips and do all that and hopefully, you know, reap the benefits of doing that.
Yeah. And I hope, like I said, it helps. The boss's big thing is to promote local comedians, because we never know who's going to be the next big thing. Hope I want everyone to be the next big thing. I think we should all be on this train together. But let's be realistic. It's only going to be a few people. So his big thing is let's promote them now so that whenever they're on their way up, we get them in the club. Then they go up to the arenas and stuff like that. And on the way back down, that's going to back in the club, because whatever goes up must come back down. So.
Yeah. And so as a comedian yourself, how long have you been doing stand up?
About a year, and I am terrible at it. So
well, it's you know, they're just it's always everybody has a different, I guess, path. And so everybody does feel, you know, everybody looks back at this time in their career and like, oof. But there's thing, you know, you're learning a lot and gleaning a lot. And so you're learning a lot of valuable lessons and things like that, that, and you're spending more time, I would say, consuming stand-up than you do later on, because as you start to get work and things like that, you just can't be at clubs and off-night shows and all the things you can do when you're first starting out. Like, you, most of the time, most places you can, they, if they know who you are for the most part and they know you're a comic, if it's not a special event or sold out show, usually they'll let you sneak in and watch the show. And so you're kind of osmosis jonesing some of the best comics and, you know, backstage pass basically for some of the greatest comics, you know, that maybe people don't know, but they become great to you.
Yeah. For me, what I began at the Improv about 8 years ago, and I actually, when I moved to Texas, I'm originally from Clarion, Pennsylvania, which is a small town where you see a cow and you go 3 more miles and you see a cow. There's just nothing there. And so when I moved to Arlington initially, I was excited because there was an improv comedy club there and I wanted to do stand up. And I was so nervous to go in there. And the first time I went in there, I went to an open mic and I got lucky. I saw Shucky Ducky, which I thought he was the first comedian I saw, which I thought was great because my name is Dr. Ducky also. And I ended up getting a job there. And for the last 8 years, I've seen some of the greatest comedians ever go on stage. I've even seen some comedians who don't work clubs go on stage, such as Bill Burr, Ron White, people like that. And so it's been really, really cool. And the sneaking in, like you said, one of the cool things that ever happened was Bill Burr was there on a Wednesday night. I was working the show and there were these two kids who came in and sat down in the back row, which was not full for whatever reason. And I came over to see if they wanted anything to drink. And they're like, is this open mic? They're like, I'm like, no, it's Bill Burr. They're like, oh, we were wondering, cause this guy's really good. And I realized they'd snuck in, they hadn't paid. And I was like, whatever. I didn't say anything. I figured to give those kids the best show of their life and just, you know, maybe one of them will be the next big comedian. You never know. So I thought that was kind of a cool little sneak in story.
Yeah, absolutely. And who is the kind of comics that you kind of, I guess, at this point kind of model yourself after? Like, who do you feel like fits your style?
I guess because I don't move much because I'm fat, and I'm not saying this comedian's fat, but he's a big guy too. Ron White, he just kind of stands at the microphone and does his thing. The other one would be Lavelle Crawford. He's a big guy too. He just kind of stands and tells funny jokes and makes funny faces. As for my actual comic styling, I don't know who I'm copying. At first, I guess in my head, it would be Bill Hicks, as everyone usually does, because everyone wants to do some version of Bill Hicks, or Bill Burr, I guess, where I just wanted to be a little bit edgier and stuff like that. So I would say at first I was interested in doing that, but now I just kind of do my own thing. And like I said, it's terrible. it's really bad.
Well, it's just, it's year one. And so it's a lot of, you know, just testing the waters and getting comfortable being the center of attention and being the person that people, you know, paying attention to. That's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot to process, especially when if you're, like you said, you get anxiety just entering the arena, let alone to be center stage. Is, you know, that's a lot to process. That's a lot to mentally try and get beyond, just to, you know, say something on stage and and hopefully get a laugh, if not even, you know, just to actually get up there and talk.
Yeah, for me, the fear was really being in front of that many people, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And being judged, as you kind of said there. And what helped me was the lights. Every open micer for the first time goes up and goes, man, these lights are so bright. And that actually helped me when I realized I couldn't see anyone. I was like, oh, this is cake. It's just like standing in a bubble. This is awesome. And so I had to get really drunk the first time to go up because I was nervous. The second, third, and fourth, and fifth time, I just went up sober. I was just like, this is so easy. And then you get open mic places where it's, you know, the open floor and you can see people staring directly at you. And you just realize you're still kind of in a bubble. Like there is a protective bubble of being a comedian. That's why it's so devastating when somebody heckles you, because they broke that bubble, you know, they broke that exterior. And so you're just like, oh, you're not part of the act right now. So why are you talking? But the more and more I do it, the more and more I get comfortable with crowd work and talking to people and just realizing, hey, it's free form. If you know what you're talking about, you know your jokes, you can go off the cuff. It's not a big deal.
Well, that's good. And how many times a week do you go up, like once, just do the Addison Improv, or do you do other open mics?
I try to do 2 to 3 a week. Money wise, I have not been in a good money place to go out as much as I'd like. I mean, every comic understands that, or every open micer at least understands that. But I try to get out as much as possible. And right now I'm actually working on a documentary for the club called Open Micer, where we are actually going around with this very nice camera they bought and filming people, you know, asking them if it's okay to film their set, asking them if it's okay to do an interview with them. And I'm just building the footage right now for it. And it's going to be a year long endeavor. And at the end of it, I'm hopefully be able to put something together to kind of show what it is like to be an open micer, because it is not easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the first years, like I don't tell people to go to, you know, I tell people for the first year, learn to love what you do. Because it's easy to be obsessive. It's easy for you to like obsess about like stand up, like, oh, this is going to be it for me. This is so great. I'm going to hit 8 open mics a night and just, you know, I'm going to be a working comic in no time. But you get past a point where it's that obsession, and it's like you're so result oriented, you're not seeing any results, and you're just like, after year one, like, this is fucking, you know, this is bullshit. You know, everybody, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong. Why am I not getting booked? I don't understand how this system works. And it's just basically learning to love what you do so that you can test the boundaries of yourself doing stand up.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest professions to get into, because you can only do it 5 minutes at a time if you're lucky. And combined, you could maybe do it a half hour a week to practice, whereas any other job, you get 8 hours a day to do it. You know what I mean? So it's such a bizarre thing to go, I got this craft I want to practice, but I only get this short amount of time to hone it. And that stage time is key to honing it, because you never know what it's going to become until you test out the joke. Plus, you find your personality on stage, you find your character or your person or who you want to be. So for me, I read a lot of books on comedy, and I find that kind of helps. But no amount of book reading can ever amount to actually getting out there and doing it.
Yeah. And to me, I think what you're talking about is just the kind of, I would say it's a little area between what your ego believes you are versus what the crowd sees with their eyes. And so if they see somebody that's awkward and weird looking, they'll give you a lot of space in the awkward space. But if you start trying to come across with full confidence, they're not going to give you as much space. They're not going to, because it doesn't match. What you're trying to be doesn't belies who you really are projecting yourself. If you're trying to come across with this faux confidence and things of, you know, talking about life experiences that you've never had from a authoritative point, like you've lived it, but then you don't, you know, let them adjust and accept who you are, then you're going to struggle, because you're always going to be the person that's pretending to be cool when everybody knows they're not.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's why saying your truth is so important, because the audience can tell if you're lying. They can tell if you're making it up. They can tell if you're all over the place, you know. And telling truth is so important in comedy because you make that personal connection with people.
Yeah.
But I also run into issues with telling the truth because I've experienced a lot in my life. So I might talk about something like abortion, which is something I've had to go through. And that really throws people for a loop. And so I'm still finding that fine razor's edge of like, how far can I take my stuff?
Yeah.
And how far do I have to pull it back? The other thing I talk about is my relationship. My girlfriend is trans. So I'm very comfortable with talking about that side of stuff where things are trans, you know what I mean? And a lot of people are still uncomfortable with that. So I'll make a joke mm-hmm. about our relationship and people immediately back off. And I'm just like, I told you my girlfriend's trans. Like, I'd be open to this with this.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you some stuff that you have not learned yet. And hopefully you'll be able to take it in. But we're still on that cusp of people understanding those kinds of relationships. It's kind of a taboo thing.
Yeah.
So my comedy works within the taboo. And that's where I'm like, I'm not very good because people kind of pull back at a certain point.
Yeah.
So,
and that's just, it's a thing that I'm guessing they don't want to think about. It's like the beginning of a Pixar movie. Like, Pixar movies are notorious for making you feel things and not just be, oh, that's funny, you know, oh, funny cartoon stuff. You know, you just, you get a dose of real life. And sometimes it just makes people like, what was it last year? During the pandemic, it was the Disney movie Turning Red, that everybody was like up in arms that, you know, of how like it's very adult and suggest, you know, like suggestive and, you know, but it's also not, it's authentic, but mm-hmm. it's not, you're just not ready for that conversation is basically.
Absolutely.
And so I can understand that with some of the topics that you're discussing that, you know, we're not ready to discuss, you know, we're not willing to discuss. So if we can't discuss them, we can't make fun of them.
And I think we need to find a way. And for me, I need to find a way to make the spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. I need to find a way to sweeten the jokes because I think they can be done.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of I need to feed it to the audience a little bit differently mm-hmm. and be able to feel how they feel. Because right now, whenever they come back at me with the defensiveness, I'm just like, well, fuck that. I'm going forward with this shit. You know what I mean? But it's also reading the room. So that's something I got to get better at is reading the room.
Yeah. It's just a situation again, where it may not be something that you can do in year one. Maybe that's a year three or year four material thing that you can come back to and be like, okay, now that I've had a couple of years of stand up under my belt, how can I try to introduce this into my set, you know, and it still be, you know, and not make it, you know, just a, you know, sound like either one that I'm, you know, coming across as, you know, insensitive to women or, you know, trying to, or in, you know, what they believe is mansplaining it, you know, just to, you know, come at it with my authenticity and not trigger those kinds of feelings of, here's a man talking about, you know, a woman's situation. You know, what authority does he have? And that's and you'll run into that, especially with, you know, sensitive subjects like that and things. Brittany Goss, you know, when she started, she was talking, you know, she would talk about, you know, her surviving breast cancer and stuff. And she would really get into, you know, details and things. And it's hard to, you know, at the beginning because people are just they don't see the humor in it like we do. And sometimes it's like being a self-deprecating comic. It's funny to you because everybody's been making fun of you your whole life, and you've come up with an even funnier line to make fun of yourself than they did. But the audience sees it as you were just, you know, sitting at home in a bathtub slitting your wrist every night. it's groupthink just is a very powerful thing, and it can make you. I would say it basically cuts off some of your higher, I would say, cognitive functions to be in a group. Like if you were one-on-one and telling those jokes, maybe you get laughs. But then you start now you're in a group of people and you don't want to be the only person in that group that finds that funny. because now you feel like you're being judged by an audience, you know, audience of people that, oh my God, that guy found that abortion joke funny.
Yeah, you're right. And that, and you know, and with comedy, you have 5 to 10 seconds to get people to like you. Mm-hmm. The second you take that stage, you're already on a countdown. This, it's so important what you do within that time. You know what I mean? And there's comics I've seen do nothing with that time. I've seen comics that have stayed silent and actually won the crowd over. I've seen people immediately go into jokes. I've seen all kinds of variations of what to do with that time. But if you don't get them within that short span of time, you're probably not going to get them. That's why I begin with fat jokes, because I'm fat. And thank God it's not taboo to talk about fat jokes right now. So if you're fat, go for it. That's all I'm going to say, because they kill every time.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it's, you could, it's something again that's lighthearted. I think with it being with so many opinions on abortion and things like that, that I feel like people that are that struggle with weight and body image, I think everybody on a whole thinks that, you know, it can be fixable, or they see signs of it being fixable. With social issues like trans and, you know, LGBTQ, all of those and things that I would say some people consider taboo, other people just don't really know how to feel, because they've never had that experience. They've never either grown up with it or been exposed to it, except for what they read and hear, whatever they listen to. And so it's hard to go through that struggle, and it's hard for people to understand that some people, you know, even though they may have had a man's body in the past or have the mind and soul of a woman, and it just doesn't make sense, because again, our parents were like, you know, they'll grow out of it. It was always they would support you with the idea that at some point a normalcy would set in. Like it's hard to go from that to realize that there needs to be a total change that's made. And so, you know, some parents are accepting, other parents, unfortunately can't get past that hurdle. And that's terrible. And it breaks my heart and things like that, that you can't, that some people can't see past.
Yeah. And for me, that's what the power of the comedy is, because you can educate people and have fun with it at the same time. So I can say things like, my girlfriend cut her dick off, like, and it's funny, and I think it's funny, and the audience is either going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe he just said that, or I'm going to hit them with the next line and it's going to make them laugh.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you know, she was born in the wrong gender. You know, she was always supposed to be a woman. She didn't know it until she was in her 20s. And there's a lot of social issues that come along with that, and we could talk about that. But how I met my girlfriend was through the power of podcasting, because we were on OkCupid and I was doing the thing that guys like me do. We just swipe right on everybody and hope to God somebody talks to us. And so she started talking to me and I was like, well, I'm not interested in dating somebody who's trans. I didn't know anything about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And through the power of podcasting, we did a podcast and she explained exactly what it was. And it took, you know, 30 minutes before I realized, oh, I'm not talking to a man pretending to be a woman. I'm talking to a woman right now.
Yeah.
And so that was my journey with it. But I always say it's like a bridge. You got people like me who walk across the bridge like it's no problem. And then you got people like some of my best friends who are just like, we'll never walk across that bridge. And that is fine.
Yeah.
You're entitled to your opinion. And that's a wonderful thing. But as a comic or a wannabe comic, I can take these jokes and actually educate people at the same time. And I think that's so freaking cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, love is where you find it. It's not a specific person, or, you know, and some people are just completely content to be alone.
It's,
you know, you can't dictate who you love. And, you know, a lot of times when you actually, you know, it doesn't matter where on the scale you are, it's not the first person you meet. You know, some people, you know, it is the supermodel. Other people, it's, you know, the girl that, you know, that you never thought, you know, okay, well, she's cute, but, you know, and then you just build a connection, and that connection just grows.
Absolutely. And on top of that, I'm polyamorous. So it's a buffet to me. I want all flavors of that Chinese buffet. I want to go out there and get me some General Tso's, some egg rolls, a little bit of noodles. So I find beauty in all of it, but I didn't always feel that way. My friend Javi Baez, he actually showed me the way, especially when it came to the bigger girls. I was always kind of shitting on them. And he showed me how attractive, like he really was just like, look at this girl. Tell me she's not beautiful. Tell me like mm-hmm. say something shitty about her. And it took a while. It took about 6 months. But finally, by the end of it, I was like, he's right. Like these big bitches are beautiful. And like, I really appreciate them. I really do. And so like, it's a buffet, man. It really is. Like we can appreciate women across the board or men too, or whatever you're into. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just appreciate it across the board. It's a buffet and have fun. Yeah.
And it's nice to feel cared about. It's nice to have someone aside from your parents, you know, that has concern for your well-being, or you know, that's willing to support you or come out to shows or indulge in a podcast or you know, just all those different things. Speaking of podcasts, you also do a podcast with a bevy of comics and local scene, comedy scene people, Camp/Horror Podcast, which is a great podcast for like horror movie fans and just basically dissecting and making fun, you know, sometimes making fun of horror movies. How did that come about?
So it actually came about, I've been podcasting for about 4 years. The initial podcast I did was called We Are Error, and it's still going at this time. We're at 120 episodes, I believe. And that was done with Jacob Pinkston, who used to work at Arlington Improv and then managed Hyenas for a while in Dallas. And my friend Javi, who I talked about already. And so it's a trio of us, and we talk about movies, entertainment, whatever the fuck we want to talk about. So we began by talking about movies, and then we slowly went and turned it into like weird news and hot topics or hot takes, I should say. Like we would just be like, I don't like this thing. Like my big thing is I hate TED Talks. I think they're fucking ridiculous. It's just people patting themselves on the back and it annoys the shit out of me. That's a hot take. So we talk about those kinds of things. Or now we do You Ain't List, which is a music podcast. So we've been doing this for a very long time. Then I had a couple of spin-off podcasts. I had a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. I have a video game podcast called We Are Bagoo. I have a Lord of the Rings podcast. I just have a ton of them. But we ended up, Will Sonomo, who used to manage over at Arlington Improv, I ended up getting in contact with him one day. I went over to his house. I can't remember why. And I was like, man, we should start a horror movie podcast. You love horror movies, and we know some other people. And he suggested David Jessup. He's like, oh man, he loves horror movies. He's all about that. He does creepy artwork. And then I was like, well, Jay McClintock, who manages Addison, I was like, he's wicked into horror movies. Let's get him. And then I already was bringing Javi and Jake on board. We knew that. And at the time, Ethan, my friend who did the video game podcast with me. So it just came about through a random conversation in Will's front yard where I'm like, it was beginning of October. I was like, we should really do this. Mm-hmm. And so I came up with a game plan. I was like, well, I like to have control over my podcast. I like to edit. I like to be able to go back and take out ums, ands, ums, buts, things like that. I love that. That streamlines it. But the idea of doing a live podcast where I had to give control of that away kind of intrigued me because, number one, I wouldn't have to edit for 2 hours. That would be amazing. And number two, we could do it live on Twitch, which we do. We do it live on Twitch at 8 p.m. every Monday night. So I was like, let's get this started tonight, because I'm one of those people, when I come up with a plan, I come up with a idea of how to do it, and then I want to do it immediately because I get super passionate about stuff. And so I was like, let's do it tonight and see how it goes. So we started our first one. I think we did Friday the 13th for the first one, and then Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the second one. And it was just so much fun. Everyone had so much fun across the board that they're like, let's do it again. And then it was, let's do it again. And then it just became a consistent Monday night thing where we just consistently want to do it over and over and over again. So it was just, it's a lot of fun. And like I said, we're heading towards 100 episodes. We're going to do a countdown of the top 5 movies. We're going to figure out together what we think those are. And then we're just going to keep going as long as the guys want to go. And my big thing is have fun. We don't take it super serious. We dissect the movie, of course. We watch clips of the movie and make fun of it, Mystery Science Theater 3000 style, and we just have fun with it. And now that we've got so many comedians, we've got David Jessup, we got Miles Francis, we got Joey Johnson, we got Mikey B, we got Raph Ramirez, we just got all these guys that are known for being funny, it just spices it up even more.
Mm-hmm. Have y'all considered doing a live one for that?
We have. If we had the following, that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. We could build the following, of course. But yeah, I think the guys are good enough that we could do it. I would only want to do 5 people right now. Sometimes we get 7 to 8 people in the cast, maybe more, which can become a little bit of a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
But as long as people are having fun, that's all I care about.
Yeah. And you could, I was going to say, you could do it if it was really good, you could then rotate the comics out for, you know, kind of like, how did this get made? You know, may have a, you know, guest comic or whatever, and then y'all would discuss. You could do a couple sets or something, and then we just, you would just watch a, you know, a little horror movie with commentary, and like, you could just take an off night, you know, either the improv or any of the other, any venue. You could do Alamo Draft House or,
yeah, I would probably want to start it in a smaller, I mean, I'm connected to the improv, so yeah, we probably could do it, but I probably want to do it in a smaller venue. And I also want to say, how did this get made? I just saw them live in Dallas, and it was freaking awesome. They killed it. They did an American Werewolf in Paris, which is a terrible and wonderful movie all at the same time.
Yeah.
But it was a really fun night. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what has been your favorite movie, I guess, on the podcast to dissect? Which one of them or stands out?
The one that stands out to me the most was Jay McClintock's pick. It was The People Under the Stairs. And I'd never saw it. And the only thing I knew about it was my mother said it was the scariest thing she ever saw. And so I was like, ooh, I can't wait to watch this. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, the movie was great. And the discussion we had about it was just as good as the movie. And it's just one of my, I would say out of the 90 that we've done so far, it's probably my favorite one that we've done. And it was probably episode 45 or something like okay. that. And some are really good and some are bad conversations. Like, it's just like any podcast, you can have a really good one or you can have a really bad one. But that one was aces.
Okay. That's great. And how do y'all have y'all gone back on certain horror movies? Like, have y'all had multiple discussions on the same movie?
Nope. Once we discuss a movie, we move on from it. We might discuss it in person, like if we see each other.
Yeah.
We might be like, oh, I forgot to say this about the movie, or I forgot to say that, or, oh boy, this really stuck with me, and I can't stop thinking about this movie. So we might have those conversations. But what I try to do with all movie reviews, I try to make sure no one talks about the movie reviews or how they feel about it before, because I feel like that ruins the organicness of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, we might go to the movies. Like, we went to see Avengers Endgame, and it was a holy experience. It was unbelievable. And then the car ride back, I had to be the guys, don't say shit. Don't say shit. Don't say anything. And it's the same thing with the horror movie cast. Like, I have to stop Jay a lot of the times from talking about his opinions. I'm like, save it for the cast, dude. Save it for the cast.
Well, that's great. And wise of you to try to keep that under wraps as long as possible so that you can, you know, use that and not have to feel like, oh, we've wasted that now. And now it's been, you know, you don't have the same passion or enthusiasm.
Exactly.
So this podcast is about fears, and a lot of your, what we're talking about kind of like rolls right into it. You can go ahead and tell the listenership what you're afraid of.
I am afraid of rejection, which I think I'm doubling down. I think your last guest did the same thing that I saw, was the fear of rejection. So, but no, I have an extreme fear of rejection. And yeah, it's not a fear of rejection from people that I don't care about. Because if I meet you and you don't like me, that's fine. I get it. Not everyone's going to like everyone. It's a rejection from the people that I care about. And that's because I have personal experiences and actually post-traumatic stress disorder from it. So.
Wow. So how did you develop PTSD from rejection?
So what happened was, I was in high school and I had a group of friends. It was a big group of friends, about 8 to 10 people. And about 11th grade, this group of friends who I've been accumulating for the entirety of my high school experience and grade school experience and blah, 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 decided that they all hated me at once. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'd go sit at a lunch table and everyone would stop talking. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, what? So anyhow, I try to crack a joke, because when I was younger, and there's a lot that goes into it, but when I was younger, I was crippled. I actually had leg braces like Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. And people are not nice to the crippled kid. And they like to beat up the crippled kid. I don't know why that's the case, but I guess beating up somebody who can't move that well is fun. And I used to get the shit kicked out of me quite consistently. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up finding out is if I could get the bullies to laugh before they decided to beat the shit out of me, I could actually save myself from an ass beating. Mm-hmm. And so I formed a sense of humor pretty damn quick. And that saved me from quite a few ass beatings, like I said. So cracking, going back to the being at the lunch table and like trying to crack the jokes with the people or talk about what we saw on SNL over the weekend or whatnot, it would always come back to me that they would not talk. And finally, I put two and two together that these people did not like me anymore. And that took a huge toll on both my ego, my self-esteem. So mixed with the whole thing of being like kind of the outsider from being crippled, the outsider suddenly, because my group of friends changed their mind that they didn't like me, the one saving grace that I had was I had one friend who didn't get it. And he was a little bit older than the rest of the kids that I hung out with. And he's like, I don't get it, man. Like, why don't they like you? He's like, you're hilarious. You're fun. So we ended up forming a band. And I was in a punk rock band for many, many years. And that was my saving grace. So, but that rejection, you know, that hurt so bad. And then being rejected from being crippled, that hurt bad. And then I had an older brother who would just put me through the ringer. He was just horrible to me. And that was pretty bad. So I have PTSD across the board for many reasons.
Yeah.
And I, when people don't like me, it just goes back to that like rejection thing. People saying like, I don't like you, so now I'm going to beat the shit out of you too. So it's an extreme fear.
Yeah.
And I really like to be on everyone's good side across the board. But once again, you're not going to be.
Yeah.
And I understand that. Certain people are just going to hate you regardless of what you do, or you're just not going to click with certain people. That's life. But man, does it hurt sometimes whenever people you thought were your friends turn their back.
Yeah.
That's why being a comic is such a good idea, because there's not a lot of rejection in that line of work.
There is. I think as you get going and then you get into year three and four, where it's really years two through four are usually the hardest. Because that's where you feel like you're making the strides, but then you're not getting the validation by getting booked on shows and things like that. So you get the rejection there of, okay, I've got 10 minutes clean. Why are you not using me? And
right.
And, or the plateau of, you know, you use me now and now you're not talking to me or using me anymore. What's changed? And so you have to learn on your own again what, you know, could be transpired, or if you can get an answer, you know, just, you know, talk face to face with that person or entity and say, hey, you know, what can I do? You can't be like, hey, why don't you book me anymore? You can be like, hey, you know, I noticed I'm not getting, is there something I can do to, you know, get better? What would you suggest? And then the club or the booker or, you know, the comedians that put the show together can say, hey, you know, we just like to rotate people in, and you haven't evolved and made any more material, you know. And so after we've used you three times, you've said the same 5 minutes each time. Our audience doesn't recycle enough that we can just keep putting you on every show and doing the same 3 to 5. Because as soon as you do it, and that at some point our audience says, "Here we go again. Here's Ducky and his 5 minutes on abortion."
Yeah, which everyone loves, by the way. It's a wonderful set. Yeah, no, you're totally right. And a lot of time it does just simply come down to rotation. There's, you know, probably 2,000 comedians at DFW, maybe a little bit less, working comedians, that is, you know, and they have to rotate that 8 people at a time, you know, yeah. Or 6 people at a time, or 3 people at a time if it's a weekend. So that becomes complicated. I think you're right. It comes down to consistently working on new material and being good at what you do. And one of the biggest things, and this is a secret no one knows, being nice. Mm-hmm. Comedy clubs give a shit about that. If you're a dick and you're funny, they'll book you, yes. But if you're nice and you're kind of funny, they'll probably book you too.
Yeah. I try to keep, you know, like an even keel and, you know, just an honest people I work with or that I, you know, we recommend or put on shows and stuff, is just to try to be upfront and honest and not like blunt. I mean, I can be blunt. I don't mean to be. And But a lot of times it comes from a good place. It comes from a place of honestly trying to be supportive, not just honestly telling you, hey, you know, just everybody, you're never finished working on stuff and you're never finished working on yourself. And you're constantly learning, but you also have to forgive yourself. And did you ever find out why those people stopped liking you?
No, I have not. And to this day, 20 years later, it still bothers me. And one of the things that I've struggled with in my personal life is I don't know if I found forgiveness for those people. Mm-hmm. I don't wish anything bad on them, no ill will. I hope that their lives are amazing and great. I hope that they have awesomeness all around. But I've never found out. The only excuse I ever got was one of the kids' parents were getting a divorce, so they didn't like me anymore. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? So I've tried to go to therapy for it and stuff like that, just because it's a ridiculous thing to have PTSD over, which I have many reasons I have PTSD. It's not just that.
Well, I don't think it's ridiculous. You have to look at it also. For me, I would say I try to look at things in a lizard brain based survival. As somebody with disabilities, that's not what I would consider a good stock. You can see that with, you know, any animal or any group, that the lesser, you know, there's a hierarchy. And if you're one of the, they try to ostracize bad genetics out because you're basically a detriment to the tribe to be there. And so it's very much a survival technique is, hey, if we're all going to survive, we can't have this one guy that can't run, you know? And it's been, you know, they did, you know, you see it in 300 with the guy that's, you know, that gets thrown off the cliff, or the babies that aren't healthy or just literally, you know, deposed of. It's unfortunately a nature thing that you can't, we can get to a level where we can suppress it, but you can't remove it. And so that's a lot of where this hate and this, again, you know, sometimes the disagreements and the uncomfortableness comes from is there's survival instincts that are pushing your thoughts and, you know, oh my gosh, this guy, and some people see that as a detriment and that's why they're so against it or aren't willing to accept it because it weakens them.
I just love the theory that they kicked me out of the group because I couldn't run. I think that is fabulous. I love that idea.
But yeah, but I mean, that's from like, you know, primitive times, is that you were a detriment to the tribe. And so there's still a piece of that. There's still a survival instinct. Depression is a survival instinct. Your body telling you, you're alone because it's telling you to find a tribe. You're not safe. We're pack animals. You know, we're at the end of the day, humanity is a pack animal. We hunted in packs and we do things as packs. And as long as you have something that you're doing, you notice that those depressive thoughts, they're not there when you're doing dishes or something like that. You know, they're there when you're sitting alone in bed or something, but it's not when you're doing something or doing something with others. Those feelings go away, and it's your biological instinct to say you're in danger. You're alone. If a woolly mammoth or a saber-toothed tiger finds you, no one else is there to protect you but you. You're in danger, and that's where those voices in your head that come from, like, you're alone. Nobody, you know, nobody likes you. It's basically, I guess, negative emotions to get you to get going and get out and do and not just be, you know, alone or whatever. And so it's real facet to me. It's just, you know, it's fascinating to when you look at it that way, of like your survival instincts are telling you, hey, go meet somebody. Go by telling, but tells you in the worst possible way.
Yeah. I feel like I've always leaned towards the underdog. I've always liked the people that had less of a chance because I had less of a chance. Mm-hmm. I was a runt of the litter. My parents literally have five children. I came out small and I came out breached. So Life was against me from the beginning, and at about 1 week old, I stopped breathing, and at about 6 month old, I stopped breathing. So I've always been the outcast. I've always been the black sheep of my family, and I've always leaned towards those kinds of people, but I've always been able to find community with those, you know, kinds of people. So like I said, my girlfriend's trans. She's in a group that's a smaller group of the population. Yeah. I mean, a bit of an outcast yourself. And so like the fact that me and her finally hooked up, you know, and found each other has been wonderful. And then on top of that, we just click. We're peas in a pod. We just agree on everything. It's beautiful. But like, yeah, man, I definitely found my crew and like, and I, once I got out of high school too, I realized like, man, it's life isn't high school. It's nothing like it. If you don't dig a place or people don't like you, just fucking leave. Book it. You ain't got to be there.
But yeah, and for the 100th time on 106 episodes, I'll say, you know, I just wish there was more basic psychology going through school that you would be exposed to, because you just don't realize. I don't think people realize you're in the, to me, it's, you're still developing. Like you're not emotionally developed. You may still not be emotionally developed at a certain age, but you're developing so much emotionally. And yes, there's more to life than high school, but until you're out of high school, that's your world. And it's so easy for parents to say, you know, it's not going to matter, but they still have to go to that same building for every single day for 4 years straight and endure, you know. And it's, I wish there was more just counsel, you know, a counselor and maybe there is, I've been out of school since 96, but just to, you know, the repercussions of, you're climbing a social ladder on top of other people. It's like you're stepping on people that you see every day to look better and to make yourself look good. And you don't realize because you're only focused on your feelings, you're not seeing the effects of what it has on others. And, you know, you don't realize it until that emotion, that all that manifests with it, either being, you know, someone tragically taking their own life or achieving, you know, taking the lives of others.
Yeah.
To me, I just think it would be so much beneficial to say, hey, by just common basic psychology for an elementary to middle school child to say, hey, when you say this to people, this is how it feels. And I know that parents say it and it comes across as innocuous possibly in your household, that, you know, somebody says, you know, quit being dumb, you know, and stuff like that. But some people just don't, you know, say you're dumb at home. And so when you tell them you're dumb, they take it as, hey, stupid, instead of you're dumb. You know, they don't see it. You don't see the phrases the same way you do.
Yeah.
And I would also love that with churches and stuff. Instead of just having a Sunday school of their worship, I would love to have a whole group of religions that just does a very base level of here's our beliefs, and just let kids see the different religions and stuff like that, to learn to respect, and not to have this ego of theology that says, you know, my religion's the right religion.
Yeah, but how are they going to get you to pay for that? They can only get you to pay if you're afraid. You got to remember that.
Yeah.
So the more you fear, the more you're going to pay to get into heaven, dude. You got to remember that. So that I would love that too. I'm very much the kind of person who I want to be educated in everything, and I want to know what's going on, and I want to make my decision based upon that. And once you're educated, most of the times you'll find empathy. And you'll find a common ground with a person who has a different belief in you, whether it be religion, sexuality, just in general, left or right, political. You know, I'm apolitical. I fall in the middle. I don't take a political side. Mm-hmm. I can see merits on both sides of the spectrum. So I try to be as understanding as possible. And going back to what you're saying about school, what people forget is school is hard. Mm-hmm. You hit on an excellent point. The fact that the children hear stuff at home and think like it's not a big deal to repeat it, or they're bullied at home by a terrible parent, and then they become a bully at school. It trickles down, you know, shit rolls downhill. It's very dangerous. And as a person who deals with PTSD, who has nightmares about school every night. I have nightmares that I'm back in it, and it's 20 years removed. Go away, nightmares. I'm fucking sick of you. I don't know why I have those dreams, but I do. And it definitely had a huge impact on me to this day. But, you know, we all work through things. And when I wake up, I love my life. I love everything that's going on in my life. I have a job that I freaking love. I have a girlfriend who is amazing, and I adore her and I love her. I have friends that are the best friends in the world. They're like brothers and sisters to me, and just like everything's good. So it's cool.
Well, and that's fantastic mentality. Thank you so much for doing this, Ducky. Where can people find you on social media if they were to want to follow you and follow your comedy podcast or personal journey?
All right, so check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at @WeArePodcast. You can find all the podcasts on wearepodcast.podbean.com or on our YouTube channel, We Are Podcast Network. You can also check out our Twitch at We Are Podcast Network. Or you can find Camp/Warcast every Monday at 8 p.m. Central. This week coming up, we'll be talking Killer Clowns. The week after that will be Kong versus Godzilla. So okay. We got lots of movies coming up. Other than that, please follow us, give a like, send a shout out, whatever you got to do. Just have fun. And that's what it's all about.
All right. Well, thanks again, Ducky.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate it.
So that was Ducky. That was a real fun conversation for me. You know, rejection, I know it seems it's just everybody gets rejected and they handle it so differently. Some people can just take it in stride. Other people just take it and, you know, just hang on it and then get angrier and angrier as the night progresses or as time goes by. Other people will use it as fuel. It's just amazing how many people different use it. So follow Ducky Wenzel at Ducky. I'll have the links for that in the show notes as well as the We Are Podcast Network links and such. I will have all of those. Make sure you check out his Camp/Horror podcast as well. He's a really good guy, and it's amazing to me, like, how he's, like, embraced life and bucked tradition and found happiness and just is so accepting of who he is, and hopefully that translates into his comedy as he keeps pursuing that. It just, you know, resonates, and he finds that, I guess, that unity feeling or whatever, that feeling of everybody that you've been there, and so they just connect with you and they're likable. But yeah, check out Ducky Wenzel. I'll have the links for that in the show notes for social media. As for me, I've been running my shows this weekend. I'm about to head out to Deep Ellum for my Joke Machine show, where we have the audience help write jokes for comics. So the comics are going to do about 5 minutes of regular material to kind of give them a gauge on who they are. And then we go through a joke that they're working on, and the audience and me and other comics, if they want to, and the audience can ask questions about the bit, and just we'll just workshop it and hopefully make it a working bit. You can check that out at dallas-comedyclub.com for shows like that. I have shows coming up in September. I will be at the Fort Worth Red Room, I believe, on the 24th of September. And then in October 21st and 22nd, I'll be featuring at Hyenas in Fort Worth. So check those dates out. More shows are on the calendar coming up. I hopefully will have more shows as the year goes on. I also have a private show October 15th. That'll be a fun time. So check out my Instagram and social media at Ryan Perio. Hope you guys have a great week. We'll have some more guests lined up for interviews. Hopefully we'll get some more as time goes on. I'm doing this on a Saturday because I have Dave and Buster's on a Sunday. But thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast, and have a great week. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook. Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnerolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Some of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, S-O-M-E-F-E-A-R-F-A-N-S, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. You know, give us some feedback if on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perrio. It's R-Y-A-N-P-E-R-R-I-O on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at ryanperrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened, and everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.